The speaker you're about to hear, Karen O.E., led the Winter 2010 Retreat, A New Beginning, sponsored by the Greater Seattle Intergroup. This recording begins about 10 minutes into her story.
But they had a lot of rules in that church. Now, remember, when I was a little girl and I was trying to be perfect, well, I knew how to scope out the rules, and I tried really hard to be a good little girl. So that would work good for me. And they liked people who were musical and who could teach and who could sing, you know, do music. And I fit. It was wonderful for me. And in that church, you weren't supposed to get married unless you married a Christian. Well, no, the right kind of Christian. So that's what my husband was. He was the right kind of Christian. And I became a leader in that church. One time a woman asked me if I was a minister's wife because I was there so much. I'm just a little bit compulsive. Would you believe that? If I'm going to do something, I'm going to really do it. Okay, so I was really active. And I couldn't tell anybody that I was feeling icky, because I was supposed to have had all the answers. I'd found the answers. I knew what was right. But I couldn't stop eating compulsively. And so one day, I saw in the paper an article by Dear Abby It was in the mid-60s. I was in a Tops Club. I was in the original Tops Club in Tacoma. I'm really old, so I saw all of these begin. And I was back. I lost some weight, but I was gaining it back like I did in everything else I did. And there was a woman there at one of my meetings, and she was a little tiny person. Now, I wondered why she was there, because none of us were tiny. We might be up and down, but we weren't tiny. She was an alcoholic. I don't know who invited her. I don't know who she was, but she told her story. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's me. That's me. And I was a teetotaler. I didn't drink. In our church, we didn't drink. Well, I thought we didn't drink. Some people did. Anyway, I thought, boy, I wish there was something like that for me. But there wasn't, so I went home to do more eating. Then Dear Abby's article came out in the paper, and that was like the late 60s. I don't even read it usually, but my mom saw it, and she told me about it, and I sent my name in. And it was a volunteer, you know, Overeaters Anonymous didn't start until 1960, so by then, when that article went into the paper, there were thousands of people. So those volunteers had to answer all those requests. So it was over a year before I got my information, and there were pamphlets in there, and I thought, oh, boy. Maybe there's hope for me. It's kind of like this little kernel, but there could be hope. And then the letter said, we're really sorry, but there's no OA north of Sacramento. If it ever comes to Washington, then we'll let you know. Well, okay, here we go again. It wasn't anything for me. But then another year and a half passed, and I got a phone call one day from a woman who said, you don't know me, but a number of years, quite a long time ago, I turned my name into Dear Abby, and they called me and wanted to know if I would hold a meeting of people who were on the list, because they'd like to get away started in Tacoma. And so I said, I'd only gained half my weight back from Weight Watchers, so what would it hurt? It's free, right? So I went to the meeting, and boy, those people were sick. Okay. There was one lady there who was still pretty obese. I know she'd lost weight. And there was a meeting in King County, up in Seattle, and there was a meeting in Bremerton, and there was a meeting in Olympia, but there was no meeting in Tacoma. And so the lady from Bremerton came, and she said that every day she got up, she went from the couch to the refrigerator, back to the couch. She kept her blinds closed, and I wasn't that sick, you know. And then the other person that was there, she lived in Tacoma, and she was going to start her meeting there. Now, I was, I have to go back a minute. Remember, I was really a leader in my church. One time I heard Sister B. I don't know if any of you have heard Sister B. She's a nun who's been in AA for years and years, and she said, talking about herself before recovery, she said, I was busy, busy, busy. I was like Mrs. God. And so I thought, ooh, I can relate to that. So I go to this meeting, and this lady stands up, and she was going to be the leader, and she swore practically every 10 words. Maybe not, you know, but I thought, that's going to be my spiritual leader? I don't think so, not. So I just thought, I'm not going to do this. Besides, but there was a lady who was right next to me who said, I want to get it started. I want to be the one that gets it started. And can we start in my home? And then there was a break, and she and I were kind of, I said, these people are weird. And she said, I know, but I'm desperate. And so she started in her home, and she lived in North Tacoma. And I lived in South Tacoma, so I couldn't go to a meeting. I couldn't drive from South Tacoma to North Tacoma. That would be too big a deal. And I would have to either call that lady who swore at me, or I would have to call Seattle every day to give my food, and there's no way. So I just went home and got sicker. And that spring, a couple of things happened. One, my little boy was a good eater. He was a healthy eater. But by now, at that time, he was wanting cookies all day long. Well, now I thought, how can I tell him, 4 years old, that he can't have cookies when I'm having cookies all day long? I was a grazer. I guess I don't think of myself as a binge eater. My binge started when I got up and ended when I went to bed. So it was just like all day long. So how could I tell him? And then one day he and I were playing, and I bent over and he laid across my arms, and I went to pick him up, and something popped in my back, and I couldn't walk, and I just thought, oh. And I was really scared. But you know why I was scared? Not that I would be paralyzed, which I should have been scared of, but what scared me was somebody was going to have to come and pick me up, over 200 pounds of me, and I couldn't stand the pain. Not that they, you know, not the pain in my back, but the shame, the guilt and shame. I just couldn't stand it. So my mom came, and we got me into the car, and we went to the doctor, and I said, you have to fix me. And of course he was paying attention to my back, and I said, well, and I had to go to the physical therapist, and here's some pills. I said, no, I weigh over 200 pounds, and I can't stop eating. Please fix me. I'd done that to doctors before. So he gave me pills, and I started one day, I took them one day, and I got really sick, and I just thought, you're going to have to die fat, because there's nothing. You can't do that. I can't do anything anymore. And shortly after that, a woman who was in my Bible study group I was teaching, one day after the meeting was over, she came over and she said, Karen, I'm going to go to Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And she said, have you heard of that? And I said, oh, yes, I tried that once. I went to the organizational meeting. I tried that once. So she said, well, you know, there's a lot of people, and they're losing a lot of weight, and it's free. And she said, don't you want to come with me? And I said, no, I don't think so. So she started to leave, and then she stopped, and she came back in, and she said, Karen, if your faith is the answer to all your problems, like you say it is, why are you still fat? Now, she was overweight, too, so it wasn't like she was belittling me. She was really trying to find out that. And, you know, it wouldn't have hurt me so badly if I hadn't asked myself that question. Over and over and over. Why can't I stop? And so I went to the meeting, and I made my sister come along, and I bought my little blue jacket coat that and wrapped it around me and sat in the back, and there were about 50 people in that room that night. And I heard those people share, and I thought, this was in March, and they started away in June, the year before. So it had grown really rapidly. It was a new program in town, and it was free, so a lot of people were interested. And I thought, oh, I want this so bad. And they told me what I would have to do. You have to get a sponsor, and to get abstinent, you have to follow this plan. There was one plan. We call it gray sheet, but we didn't call it gray sheet then because we didn't use gray paper. We used plain white, I think. But it was the same thing, and there was something on there that I'd never done before. You didn't get any bread, no starch. And I thought, I've gone without sugar before. I've tried all kinds of things, but I've never gone a day without bread. Now, so I told my sister, we both got sponsors, and I went home, and I was just torn because I wanted it, but I didn't want to do it. I went to bed. My husband was already in bed, and I said, I think I like this new program. And he said, ugh. Like, it's already been through all those things with me, all the different things I tried. And I said, well, it's free. And he said, oh. So he went to sleep, and it was just me and my fear and my guilt and my hope and my higher power. And I cried and cried. And that was my first real bottom. And I said to God, and it was the bread. I mean, I didn't know I didn't even pay attention. I was going to have to, you know, do an inventory and all that stuff. I just didn't want to eat. I didn't think I could get through a day without bread. But I said, after I cried and cried, I wanted it, I went to sleep. But before that, I said, God, if this is going to happen, you're going to have to do it for me, because there's no way. And I got up that next morning and I called my sponsor and I started abstaining. And the gift about that is that I would never have tried that plan if I hadn't had, you know, that was the only way you could get abstinent, unless you had the doctor's orders. And I don't follow that exact food plan anymore, but it showed me how it felt in my body to be free of sugar and things that turned into sugar real fast in my body. And I loved OA right from the beginning. And I just gained so many wonderful friends. I still have a few friends that we call ourselves the Sandbox Buddies. We started together and we kind of hung on together, and I still love them a lot. And I loved OA. And I lost a lot of weight. I was able to maintain my abstinence for a long time. And I went from 220 down to about 130. And I have the answers now. And you know what? I used to just want to go out. I used to want to go out on the streets or in the stores when I saw somebody overweight. I wanted to go up and say, I found it. Why don't you come with me? But I didn't have the nerve, but I did talk to everybody I know. And one time I remember there was some people, a woman that I knew, and we weren't especially good friends anyway. And she came to the meetings, and then somebody else told me that they'd heard her say, if anybody talks about Overeaters Anonymous to me one more time. And I had to learn that, you know what, it isn't the thing for everybody. It was okay for me, but it was my program, and I didn't need to beat anybody else over the head. So that's how it started for me. And I abstained for a long time. Then life happened to me, and a lot of the people were leaving the meetings. They came to the meetings, and they got the food plan, and they, you know, they worked it for a while, but they wanted to get thin. They didn't really want to change their life. They just wanted to get thin. So a lot of people left, and then it was hard for me. My sister quit. But all the things happened. Her husband was killed in a fire, and my other sister's little two-year-old died of a birth defect in a year apart. And the church that we were involved in had a big split. You know, sometimes churches do that, and we were right in the middle of it. And I was not in a really good place. It was really hard. A lot of grieving. And I tried to work the steps, but I wasn't very far into that process. And after a while, I started slipping and sliding with my abstinence. And I kept going. I just kept going. That was in 1974. And my brother-in-law was killed in 1977, and so that by 1978 I was really frustrated. The meetings were small, lots of people, there weren't a lot of people abstaining. I was really discouraged, and so for a while, that almost a year, I didn't go to meetings. I didn't throw my books away, I put them in a drawer. and I had connection. I one of my dearest friends, Stacia, is here with me this weekend, and she and I never lost touch during that whole time. But that was my first relapse. And I gained a lot of my weight back. The one thing I didn't ever take back was I didn't take back sugar. I think a couple of times I ate sugar, but you can eat a lot and not eat sugar and gain a lot of weight if you do that. So in 1979, I went into the doctor for my physical in June, and I said, I need you to help me because I can't, I was healthy. He said I was fine. And he didn't say anything about my weight, but I said, I weigh 190 pounds and this is just not okay. And I just can't, you know. He said, well, have you tried, is there anything that's ever worked for you? And I said, well, yes. And he said, well, what was that? And I said, oh, Reader's Anonymous. And he said, well, then why don't you go back? And I said, well, you don't understand. And he said, I said, you know, if you work away, you have to really work it. And I've got this busy life, and I just don't know how to have time. And he said, well, it's up to you. But he said, you know, anything other program that you're going to use is going to take everything, take something from you, and a lot of them take a lot of money. So I was a little bit ticked off at him. And I went home, and I thought, I'm off for the summer. I'm going to give away one more chance. I'm off for the summer. And when I came back that time, I think I was hurting enough that I was more ready. And then in addition to that, the meetings were different. People were sitting around tables and they were studying the books. And at that time, we didn't have any OA books. So we read out of this book, the 12 of 12 of AA, and this book, My Little Friends. And that's where I got my program. And we would go to meetings and we would read the steps and then we would try to go out and live them and then we would come back and then we would try to... This went on and on, and I could tell that it was starting to change me. I could really tell that it was starting to change me. And one of the things that I found out was that I was really, really judgmental. And this was part of my spiritual awakening, was that I had to learn that I knew... When I came back and really got serious about it, I knew I had to be in OA. There was no other way I was going to be healthy. But that happens to me. It's a senior moment. It'll come back. Yeah, I was judgmental. Okay, that's right. And you know, when I came to OA in the big book and the 12 by 12, it talks about being in the program is like being in a lifeboat, life raft. And what I learned was I had to, if I had to stay in the boat, I had to let other people stay in the boat too, whether I agreed with them or not, whether they believed like me or not. And so you'll be surprised at this, but there were people in a way that I didn't like very well. I bet that doesn't happen to any of you, but there were a few. And, but I wanted to, either I wanted to not have them there, or I wanted to convert them, one or the other. And you wouldn't let me do the converting, so. But you know what happened? And this is how my higher power kept working on my spiritual awakening. It was like I would listen to these people, and some of the people that I didn't agree with often had the best thing, just exactly what I needed to know. Some people who were my dear, dear friends didn't believe in God the way I believed in God, but they were wonderful people, and they were so loving and so spiritual that I had to start thinking, maybe I don't know everything. And so I think that's one of the keys that started me, and I became more and more aware that I needed to be honest, I needed to be open-minded, and I needed to be willing. And we say that we don't require anything in this program, but these three things are indispensable. And you know, when I was trying to please everybody, when I was I'll talk about this more tomorrow, but when I was keeping so busy and I was trying to make everybody happy, I really wasn't, I'd like to say I wasn't honest, but I was lying, because I said what you wanted to say, even though it didn't feel like what I wanted inside. And so I had to, when I read those books, that's the kind of stuff it told me things like, if there's a problem, with you. The axiom is, if there's a problem with you, it's you. It also said, there were a lot of things in there that made me really realize how I wasn't being honest. And that judgmental stuff, I wasn't being open-minded. But my addiction was the thing, the gift I had to say, Karen, where else will you go? And that kept me willing to keep coming back and make some big changes. During that time, my kids started growing up, and one of the things that my sponsor, and I have to tell you, you know who that sponsor was? The lady who swore all the time. Took me a while, but she became my sponsor, and she made me write. And I didn't think writing was going to do any good, and I didn't want to write, and liked to write, and she said, we're going to write. And I said, okay, but I don't know what, write about your feelings, she said. And she'd have me write, and we worked on this for quite a while. And then we were trying to figure out why I was slipping and sliding with my abstinence. Why was I having such a problem? And we figured out from reading this, when I was really having trouble was when I was at home. And after a while, she said, Karen, is there a problem with your marriage? And I said, of course not. And I fired her. Mrs. God does not get a divorce. So, but I had to start looking at what's really going on in my family, in my life. And eventually, things got really hard at our house, and it was really uncomfortable, and I finally went to some counseling. And I realized when I went to this counselor, I thought he was going to fix our family, and I went to him and I said, I don't know if my husband needs to come or if I need to come or what. And he said, well, you know what, Karen? He can come if he wants to, but I think you have a few things we could work on. It's his fault that we're having all this problem, right? And so we worked, and he said, the first thing I'd like to do is talk about your church. And I had to really look at some things that I had changed my values and my belief system, something in a lot, and I had to leave that church, and I knew that when I left the church that my marriage wouldn't make it. And he really didn't encourage me to leave the church, but I knew. My higher power, just several things happened that I knew that I needed to be there, because it was wonderful people there, but I couldn't be that rigid anymore. And so this was hard. It led to me what I call my dark valley. It's when after that I left the church, it wasn't less than a year when, about a year, my husband and I separated. And I want to talk more about this tomorrow, but I had another bottom just before that. And because I was so crazy, even though I would be abstaining, I was still crazy. I was trying to do too many things. I was overcommitted. I was unhappy. Even though I was trying to work my spiritual program, I was trying to do more things than anybody can do in the time that I had. And I knew it was crazy. I knew it was crazy, but I didn't know what to do. So I got on my knees, and it was like that night that I cried about the bread. I said, God, I know this is crazy. I know, but I have to take care of my children, my house, my husband, my neighbors, my mom and dad, my sisters who've lost their loved ones, my church, not just my part of the church, but the whole church I was responsible for, and my job, and, you know, and what do I let go of? How could I let go of any of these things? And I just said, you know, if that's going to happen, if some things have to be taken out of my life, it's going to have to be you, not me. And so in that process, I left that marriage, and my sons decided that they would stay with the house so that they didn't have to choose, and that meant that they chose their dad. I didn't have a house, and I didn't have my sons. Well, they were really mad at me, but they were still my sons. And everything I owned, not legally, but when I left, was fit in my little car, and I house sat for 6 months. And, you know, it was like, it was really a deep, deep, hard time for me, except there was this freedom part. It was this mixture of really believing I was doing what God wanted me to do, even though it didn't look right. And you know what? A lot of people didn't like what I did. And for me, the little girl who was so afraid that people found out that I did something wrong, I wouldn't be able to stand the pain. And you know, those are all things that I had to learn by experience. And anyway, so I did, that was a big important time in my life. I went back to school and I was able to get a master's degree. When I came back in, they changed my job. My husband and I got a divorce. I started going to open AA meetings and I started, I just was doing a lot of things to grow and expand. It was a kind of an exciting time in my life. And even though it was painful, and I was growing and changing. That counselor that I went to said, you know, Karen, it's kind of fun to watch you just blossoming before my eyes. And I said, well, it felt like I was in this little box, and I got out of that box, and now sometimes I like to go back in, but I don't fit. And after I'd been in AA for a while, I met another man, and he and I got married. He's a recovering alcoholic, and we've been married 19 years now, and it's really a good marriage. And so the one thing I never gave up was doing my work in OA. And it was, I had to use the tools. I used all those tools. I worked the steps to the best of my ability. By the time I did that, I started abstaining better, and I really was losing weight too. It wasn't the answer because I left, but I was abstaining better than I had before, and so, and my life just changed. It really, really changed, and my children are close to me. We have a wonderful relationship. My sisters and my mother and dad never understood all my stuff, and so they were really close to me. But now we're really close. I have a new little house. We bought it in 2000. It's just a wonderful little grandma-grandpa house, and I have granddaughters and a relationship with them that's just delight. And I have a wonderful relationship with my husband and my higher power. Now, the one thing, I was so afraid when I left that church that God would leave me. That was the one thing that never changed. Everything else changed, but my relationship with my higher power didn't change. It maybe got better, but it never went away. And I'm just running over these things real quickly, but those were painful things. You know, not having my children with me was probably the hardest. And but we had to build a new relationship, built on new ways of living and thinking and acting. And so, I guess the best thing, the other nice, really good thing is that I have a better relationship with Karen today. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I have a notebook, and tomorrow I'll leave it so people can look it out. 35 years is a long time, so I've sort of done it in decades, and I kind of made a story of it, so you can see it tomorrow. But the 80s were the hardest for me. I just was lost in those 80s. And then in the 90s, things started turning around, and all that growth happened. And then during all that time, I couldn't find a plan of eating that really, really worked for me. I could abstain, but I couldn't. I was still fighting addiction. And finally, in 1999, I found a food plan, a plan of eating that really worked for me. It included some starch that I could eat that didn't turn into sugar real fast in my body, so I wasn't craving. That was in 1999, and I've been able to be really abstinent since then. I started out at 220 pounds, and now I'm maintaining a 75-pound weight loss. My life is just—it's not just the weight. It's the whole package of a new person that I love about OA. It's always hard to pick out what you want to say to people. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about different aspects of recovery, and I'll be able to tell a few more experiences in my life, but I am so grateful that I was able to find this program. And it just felt like that my higher power wanted me here, because I was born in 1939. You know what year the big book came out? 1939. I just figured higher power knew Karen's was coming. We need a 12-step program. I don't have a very big ego, do I? But I am so grateful for it. And the other thing I want to say is that I went to retreats a lot. And when I was young and really working the program, a couple things happened. One was I was really thin, and we had these wonderful speakers. And after the speaker was done, I went up to her, and I was, just started talking to her and getting acquainted with her. And she said something like, "Well, I'm really glad you're here, and I know that you have a lot of growing to do." And I thought, "What? I'm thin, and you think I have growing to do?" And so. We're going to talk about body image and that kind of stuff tomorrow, but I look back and I thought, boy, did you have a lot of growing to do, Karen. You just didn't know it. Okay, and then the other thing was, there's this wonderful lady who, I really liked her, but she scared me, because she, her spiritual journey took her in a way that I just didn't think was right. We hadn't heard of New Age back then, but she talked about her spirituality, how she just felt like being in a river floating down, and I thought, oh, I don't think so. And then a number of years later, she came back to our area. It was up in north of Everett, up by Cedro Woolley. They had a retreat, and I drove up there all by myself. And on the way, I had an accident. A car came and hit me head on, turned right over, right into my lane, and I had to call somebody, have them come get me. And then my husband, at that time he hated OA, but he took me all the way. I paid the money, and he took me all the way up to that retreat from Tacoma. And I got there because she was speaking. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to give me the answers. And the first morning she said, "Well, we're going to be talking about the traditions this weekend." And I thought, the traditions? Do you know how much this is? You know how much I've sacrificed to come here? And you're going to, I need help. I have these problems in my life. And then she said, I didn't say that, but I was, And she said, I know a lot of people don't like to talk about the traditions, but she said, "If you have any problem with relationships, then you need to look at the traditions." And I thought, oh. So, and at that retreat, I went up to her and I said, because I had done all this spiritual changing, and I said, "I need you to know that I'm not in my church anymore. And I remember listening to you, and you were just, I didn't think you scared me." And she started giggling. And I said, well, I didn't think that was very funny. And she said, "Karen, I'm singing in the Methodist choir now." So, there's no right or wrong answer. That's what's so great about OA. Every one of us can find our higher power in the way that works for us. And we each have our own journey. And I don't know what's going to happen 5 years from now or 10 years from now, what I'll be. But I know that if I come to this program and I work these 12 steps, that my life just gets better and better. Okay, I think I'm done. I don't know what time it is.
8:35.
What time was I supposed to be done?
10
till?
We can share.
Okay, all right. I think I need to be done, and I think you probably are needing me to be done for like two. So I'm glad that you're here, and I hope that I get to know a lot of you today, this weekend, because I love these retreats. They really. Have a big, important part of my life. I think some people don't know how much they're missing when they don't come to these, don't you? So I'm glad you're here, and we'll talk some more tomorrow. Thank you.